Rabbi Schwartz here?
Yeah.
Ah, okay. All right, so I don't know if Rabbi Schwartz mentioned it. We're going to have an abridged session today. We're not going to have a full hour and a half. And Bechal, this whole topic that we put together, the packet is abridged as well. Had we had more time, we would have had much more Mekoros here, and maybe if we're going to do this again with proper preparation, we'll have a lot more in the packet. The best we can hope to do today is provide an overview to a topic which is so central to Yamim Noraim. The Rav used to say, Salvechik used to say that without Piyut, you really wouldn't get a feeling for the Kedushas Hayom. The Piyut can really bring out the beauty of the day, the nature of the day, the uniqueness of the day. This is true for many, many Piyutim, but all the more so for Yamim Noraim. Generally today we're not so familiar with Piyut, which makes it more of a challenge. But Yom Noraim, so much of the davening is really the singing, the reciting of the Piyutim. So something of an overview to the whole Indian of Piyut. The institution of Piyut goes back probably to times of Chazal already. There are numerous Midrashim, Medrashim Shir HaShirim Rabba and Koheles Rabba that talk about, use a word actually, Paitana. They identify different people who were known to be Paitanim. The word Piyut itself, Avi Megash, in the Tshuva Siman Beis Dalet says it's a Greek word, and it means song, Shira. I mean, it's probably the origin of the word poetry that we have today. It means Shira, song. When you think about Piyut, we have to realize the relationship of Piyut to Tfilah Kvua. Chazal Metaken, the regular Tfilos, Shmoneh Esrei, the Nusach of the Brachos before and after Kriya Shema, morning and evening. And Piyutim found their way into the fabric of the regular Tefillah. At one point, perhaps, it sort of took over the actual Nusach. The only thing that was really left was the beginning and the end. Over time, what seemed to have happened was that the original Nusach was maintained, was preserved, but the Piyut was an expansion of that Nusach, so that the Piyut would reflect not just the Nusach itself, but also the particular time of the year that you were saying it. There were Piyutim that were made for every single Shabbos of the year, and that's, consider the fact that at one in Eretz Yisrael they used to take three and some years, a triennial cycle, to finish the parashas of the Torah, so literally every Sidra would have a separate Piyut. So the, you know, when you'd be saying the various on that particular Shabbos, you would be also emphasizing the particular Kriyas HaTorah of that Shabbos. What was the purpose of Piyut? And there were also many Piyutim that had halachos in them that related to the time of the year. Why did Piyut happen? Why it became something so prevalent? And we'll see, although there was some opposition to Piyut, but everyone also recognized that the people who composed these Piyutim were not ordinary people, and it was such a embedded in the actual fabric of the tefillah. We should also mention, we'll get back to this, that a lot of the piyutim were really meant for the shliach tzibur, not even for the kahal. Maybe the kahal would have a chorus or a refrain here and there, but a lot of it was really designated for the shliach tzibur to sort of expand on what he was saying. Separate from the piyut, he would also take on this the larger themes of the day as reflected in the piyut. Why was this? So on one simple level, because it created more of an inspiration for the davening. The fact that there was a regular tefillah kavua, we can't get away from that. That was clearly part of the definition of tefillah. But when you have piyut, it resonates, it relates more to this particular occasion, it's spontaneous, it's inspirational. And so that certainly made the tefillah more alive, and you know, that certainly lent more meaning and significance to the actual experience of tefillah. That was one idea. The other idea that's been mentioned, the Sefer Ha'itim, you'll have this in the packet, mentions that Piyut came as a response to Shmad, to persecution. When we were not allowed to learn Torah, so we had to find a way to educate people, and if you couldn't learn Torah in a formal sense, so people came to shul, we'd sneak in halachos of the Chag through the Tefillah. So based on that, the Sefer Ha'itim says that now that we don't have the same threat that once existed, so maybe it would be better not to say piyut. He's one of those Rishonim that took issue with piyut because the need no longer applies. One of the Talmidim of the Noda Yehuda, the author of the Tshuva Meyava, and I think you have this inside the packet as well, has a very long discussion of piyut. He touches a pasuk in Tehillim, Zmirus Hayulicha Kechukecha Beveis Migurai. And he touches that to say, Migurai doesn't mean Kipshuto, it means where I lived. But Migurai also means when I was afraid, when I was terrified, by Yogar Moav Meha'am, to be afraid. When I was, in a sense, afraid and threatened, that's when Zmirus Hayulichukecha. That's when the mitzvos became poetry, became Shira. Because the Shas HaShemad prompted the need for piyut in the form of halachos, in the form of piyut. There are many different names to piyutim that you probably come across. The most famous name is called krovos. The Abudram explains why it's called that. He says because the shliach tzibur is like he was the makam, the kohen gadol. Kohen gadol was one who came close to the mizbeach to offer karbanos, and the shliach tzibur serves in that capacity in a shul. And so it's like he's offering karbanos, so to speak. Another reason that he says, and this is also mentioned by Eliyahu Rabba, that krovos means in the middle of, because the krovos are piyutim that were inserted within a larger structure of the existing nusach ha-tefillah. Others have other explanations for the term itself. Another variation of the word krovos is used, probably have seen, is krovets with a tzadi at the end. Like in Siddur, they'll say krovets for Purim. So there are those who say that really krovets is nothing more but a corruption of the term krovos, and to somehow people began to say it wrong, or somehow it just was thought that it was krovots, but really it's the same word. Others, the Beis Yosef quotes, that krovots is a Rashi tevos of kovin of Yeshua v'aholei tzadikim. Either way, that's one term. Other terms that you find, yotzros are the piyutim that were designed for the bracha of yotzer. You know, and then he's Mount Sefer Shoshana. You see, piyutim or olam otzachayim or comes afterwards. These are inserted in the brach of yotzer or another term, maravios. Those are the piyutim that were designed for the brach of marav arav at night. There's other terms, tkiyasos. The piyutim are designed that would be said within the brachos of malchus, achonos, and shofros that we don't typically say today. There are the expression called rishuyos, rishus. That means it's for the chazan to give, ask permission that he should be able to serve as a shliach tzibur. For example, misod chachamim u'nevonim that we typically have in the beginning of Zoras Hashatz. That's a rishus, and there are others as well. These are all categories and different names that you find depending on where the piyut is supposed to be said. Some basic characteristics of piyut. The language of piyut is rooted very, very heavily in Tanakh, in Psukim and Tanakh, and also in Midrashim, in Midrashi Agada especially. Piyut assumes a certain level of familiarity with the Makoros, which is what perhaps makes it so difficult for us, because unfortunately we have a lot of gaps in our education. We learned Torah Baal Peh before we've really fully learned Torah Dechsav. It's a problem maybe. And yet we have to find ways to close those gaps and fill those gaps. And to go back to the Makoros, if you feel a comfort level with Psukim, with Chazal, then you feel comfortable with piyutim. And, you know, something is always lost with the translation, as much as you can give credit to Art Scroll and all those who've done wonderful work in translating Machzorim and Slichas and so on. But at the same time, unless you appreciate the original Hebrew, you really missed out on a lot in terms of understanding the beauty of piyut. Another interesting characteristic of piyut is that it takes liberties with language. And we'll see, that was one of the points that Ibn Ezra was bothered by. New words were created that did not exist before, new genres. In a way, it's a dynamic process in terms of the evolution of language. Certain words and verb forms of words that were not, again, have not existed before, the Paitonim really expanded the limits, pushed the limits of Lashon HaKodesh. And again, this also didn't always fit with the rules of diktuk. Again, something Ibn Ezra was concerned about. If you want to be a purist about things, then this is not the right way to express this word. And again, Zachar Nekeva sometimes got lost in the shuffle and things like that. Another interesting characteristic appeared is the acrostics. This is already alluded to in the Midrashim and Shir HaShirim Rabbah. The Aleph Beis acrostic, certainly, that they follow. Sometimes it's not Aleph Beis in order, it's Aleph Beis in reverse, what we call Tashrak. And what's also interesting is oftentimes after the Aleph Beis, you have embedded in the Nusach the name of the composer, which is again something that's very unique to Piyut. You'll have the name and his father's name, and you'll have sometimes Chazak, and so on. These are all things that the Paitanim did. And some have suggested that maybe this was taken to some extent from other cultures. I don't know, I can't say anything about this, but it may have been common also for others who were composing poems to do it, and it was co-opted by the Paitanim as well. Certainly the Aleph Beis you wouldn't say that for, but the name itself, I don't know. I do remember, though, in Parshas Hazinu, that someone points out that there's a remez to Moshe's name in the Rashi Tevel's beginning of Hazinu, so you have a hint to Moshe, so that certainly preceded any of the other cultures that did this. Rav Salvechik, the Rav, noted something fascinating about the way we recite Piyutim. The give and take, the sense of the Chazin, and then we are sometimes ahead of the Chazin, and the prompting of the Chazin prompts us. And in a way, what this did was it actually did something very strange. As you probably have realized, many of the piyutim that we say, we don't really say the way it was originally designed to be said. It's clear from the piyutim, the Chol Maminim, for example. The Chol Maminim is supposed to be the response to the stanza before it. Ha'ochis biyad midas mishpat, the Chol Maminim shu kel emunah. You can see how the Chol Maminim is a theme that speaks to the line before, not what's supposed to connect with the line later. And this is true about so many of the people. Vashamayim va'aretz, gibar v'naratz, dago mervava, husach v'yehi, is betziva v'nidro. Not dago mervava, husach v'yehi. Right? Husach v'yehi, he spoke and existed, betziva v'nidro. And so on. Melech Elyon, we see that as well, was not to be said after. It was meant to be said before the stanza. What happened was, because over time, it wasn't just the Shach saying what the Shach said and the Tzibur saying what the Tzibur said. It was the Tzibur taking over the Shach's line and the Shach's taking over the Tzibur's line. And the Rav used to say that this is really reflecting the theme of Davar Shebikdusha. Davar Shebikdusha, one of the characteristics that Rav identified in Davar Shebikdusha is what we find with Malachim. The Kara Zeh or Zeh V'Amar. And that is that there's a give and take and there's a prompting from the Chazan to the Tzibur, so that one is playing off the other. And once that happens, we ran into his line and he runs into our lines, and that's how it plays out. But it's really not such a terrible thing because it reflects the larger notion, the Karzel Zeva Amar of Davar Shebikdusha. In a way, those who know from Kedusha, in a sense, you have it there as well. Many of us say the lines of the Chazan. First, when the Kaddish was originally designed, the Shulchan Aruch says, is designed for the Chazan. The Gra says we should still say it that way. The Kaddish is the Chazan, not the Tzibur. Kaddish, 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 and then U'masam Baruch Yomeru. So a lot of times you hear people saying U'masam Baruch Yomeru. Really, that was the Chazan's line. V'tibei Kaddish HaKasav Leimor is really the Chazan's line. But again, part of the same idea that we end up going on and taking over to prompt the next one. It's important to realize how prevalent Piyut was. It was ubiquitous. It was everywhere. And there were very famous Paitanim. We're not going to be able to mention a fraction of the number of Paitanim there were, but I'll mention a couple of very famous names. One of the earliest Paitanim's name was Yanai. Yanai wrote unbelievable number of Piyutim that have been discovered recently in the Geniza, in Cairo Geniza. Literally for every Sidra, and Sidra means not Parsha, but dividing the Parshas over 3 years, every Sidra had a Piyut. We are probably familiar with one of his compositions that found its way into the Haggadah Shel Pesach. And that was probably the piyut that was designed for the Sidra Vayhi Vachatzi HaLaila in Parshas Bo. We say it on the end of the Seder, Az Rav Nisim Vleisa Balaila Vayhi Vachatzi HaLaila. That was Yanai. And there are many, many others. There's a two-volume work that was written, put together by Professor Nachum Bransnik, who lives in Eretz Yisrael, on Piyutei Yanai. There were others before him, but he took what they had and he went beyond to try to analyze an annotated edition of all his Piyutim that we have to this day. One of the most famous paitanim, of course, was Meleza HaKalir. According to Tosus in Chagiga Daf Yud Gimel, he was the Tana Rav Eleza Rav Shimon, because Tosus finds a medrash that Rav Eleza Rav Shimon was a paitana. Tosus assumes Meleza HaKalir lived in the time of the Tanaim, and he says in his time the Mekadosh al Pi Ariyah, and that's why you never find a piyutim for the second day. As we'll see soon, the mouths of Rosh Hashanah, the first day's piyutim of Eleza HaKalir. The second day's piyutim are of Shimon HaGadol. Eleza HaKalir wrote for only the first day. So Tosu says, because he lived in Eretz Yisrael, there's a Chuvas HaRashba that says he was a different Tana of Eleza ben Arach. And there's a lot of discussion about whether, in fact, historically, this would be the case. Rav Yaakov Emden has some questions about it. I think he quotes Yarizal to say that Rav Eleza HaKalir was a nitzotz of the neshama of Rav Eleza Rav Shimon. So you can say he was Rav Shimon in some sense, but not actually. And maybe he lived closer to the period of the Gaonim. So there's a lot of discussion about exactly when he lived. But certainly he was considered to be one of the greatest paitanim. Wherever you go, you see Rav Eleza HaKalir stamp. You see him in Tfilas Tal, Tfilas Geshem, in Hoshanis. You see him in the Slichis. You see him in the Kinnis of Tisha B'Av. And of course, you see him in the piyutim of Yom Tovim, Yom Noroim. The Rishonim quote that when he composed a piyut on the Ofan of the Chayos HaKodesh, there was literally a feeling of a kedusha that the Chayos were there as he was composing it. The kedusha of Eleza HaKalir. Another, again, very very important paitan was of Shimon HaGadol, who, as I mentioned before, is really the one who's responsible for the second day piyut of Rosh Hashanah. Shimon HaGadol very much tried to go in the same basic approach of writing piyut like Rav Eleza HaKalir. The first day we have a Melech Elyon that we say in Musaf, it's Rav Eleza HaKalir's Melech Elyon. The second day we have Melech Elyon composed by Shimon HaGadol, which is again in the same genre as Rav Eleza HaKalir. Shimon HaGadol was a contemporary, an older contemporary of Rav Gershon Maor HaGola. This is before Rashi. There are, again, a lot of stories said about him, a lot of interesting stories. He had two sons. One's name was Elchanan, and that name Elchanan is actually alluded to in the piyut of Yotzvos, of the second day Rosh Hashanah, the word Elchanan Nachalaso. So he embedded this, the name of his son in the piyut. Another son's name was Yitzchak, and there's an interesting story, and actually I happened to notice yesterday in saying Slichas in the morning, that the art scroll quotes a story in the bottom of the Slichas, because he composed Slicha Yud Aleph that we said yesterday, Anikra Slicha Kisaneni. So they mentioned in the bottom about Rav Shimon HaGadol of Mainz, Magensa. He lived from 950 to 1020, and the story that's told about his son Elchanan was that he was kidnapped. The son was kidnapped as a baby, as a young child, by the maid, handed over to a monastery, raised as a Christian. He absorbed so much knowledge that he continuously was raised in rank. He became what was called the Jewish Pope. And the story goes that Rav Shimon HaGadol was known would constantly be interceding on behalf of the Jewish communities, because to avert gzeros and so on. So at one time the Pope invited his guest, Rav Shimon HaGadol, to play chess. Rav Shimon was a master at the game of chess, and he was stunned when this Pope was able to checkmate him. Anyway, the story goes, again, I don't know to what extent it's true or not, but certainly very interesting. At the end of the day, they realized who each other were, and the Jewish Pope found a way to disappear with his father, and the rest is history. Anyway, Rav Shimon HaGadol, one of the greatest paitanim, second day Rosh Hashanah. We should also be aware, again, in terms of how widespread piyut was. There are many basic tefillos that we have that really contain piyut in them. We don't even realize it. Think about Shabbos Shmoneh Esrei. Tikanta Shabbos is a piyut. It's part of our Musaf Shmoneh Esrei, and it's a piyut that found its way into the Shmoneh Esrei that we say it. Yismach Moshe is probably a piyut. The Aruch HaShulchan says that these parts of the Shmoneh Esrei or Shabbos are not ma'akev. Some would just say, okay, okay, v'seinu. Instead of saying anything before that, they'd be yotzei their davening. But Maisa became part of our davening. So you can argue in Aruch HaShulchan, yes, no, but it clearly was a piyut. Kel Adon is a piyut. A lot of parts of davening we don't realize at first, but they're actually piyutim. Rashi, Tosus, Rishonim, take piyutim very seriously. They ask kashas from piyutim on gemaras. Tosis says it was a kalir can argue on a gemara because he was a Tana. That was Tosis' defense, and he can go to Yerushalmi against the Bavli. Rav Yosef Tuv Elen wrote the famous piyut that we have halachus from Bedigas Chametz all the way until Leil Seder, and the Rishonim ask kashas from the piyut of Yosef Tuv Elen on gemaras. You can imagine, just to bring the point home, I mean, Lahavdil, but can you imagine asking a kasha from Avram Fried's lyrics or a chais, Elipa Shmelitz, whatever it might be, on a chais, on a pasuk, on a gemara, on a mishnayis? I mean, you realize what we're talking about. We're talking about not just songs, not just entertainment. We're talking about mamish kedoshe elyon, and, you know, they were taken very, very seriously. At the same time, despite the fact, again, that the piyut was very reckoned with and taken seriously, there were concerns that were raised, again, to piyut. First, halachically, and this you'll find already in Shulchan Aruch Samaches, where the issue comes up based on really a Mishnah in the first parak in Brachas. The Mishnah says, Makam she'amnu l'katzer en v'shoy l'harich, l'harich en v'shoy l'katzer. The shayla is what the pshat exactly is in that Mishnah. Whether that means, in fact, that you can't alter the nusach itself, the body of the brachos, and here you have piyutim that are embedded in the bracha, for example, of Kriya Shema, before Kriya Shema, after Kriya Shema. Others interpreted those phrases differently. It means you can't add a baruch to end a bracha. If it's a short bracha, you can't take away a baruch in the beginning. If it's supposed to be there, things like this relating to the chasimos. The Rajba is more meikel in general. He says that as long as you preserve the basic structure, that's what matters. Piyutim don't pasul in any way. The Rambam seems to be more machmir. Certainly l'chatchila, possibly the Diyeved, there's a steer in two Rambams. Again, I'm going very quickly. If you look in Samaches in the Torah, you get a flavor for the issue. Binyan hafsaka shemafsik in the Birchas Shema, lo makrovetz lo yuhaya shelo lahafsik. Better not. You see, it's interesting, even the way the Rishonim are dealing with the issue, they're talking about in theory, but then they deal with the fact that it was done. It was so much part of what people were doing. The Ramah was asked about this, and it says, asur lahafsik, based on the Mishnah in Brachas. And that which it's been told to you that I'm there and I listen, emes hugad lachem, but not because I agree, not shtika koda, but simply I don't want to not be in shul because I want to hear kedusha. This was a reality. Not every time that the halacha seemed to be a certain way, or at least was felt to be a certain way, did it have the arm and the leverage to be able to change the practice. On the other hand, when you said yesh b'yadi limchos ruhudach emes, better they should be shogun and not mezid, and that was the Ramah's position. But again, there were those who came to the defense of piyut. If you look in the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah, you see that playing out as well. The Mechaber says better not to say it because of hefsik. Again, rooted in them basically in that Mishnah in Brachis. The Ramah says yesh omdein iser b'davar based on mostly the Rajba. The Chen Noagin says the Ramah that we say piyut v'hameikel v'lo omram ein lo hifsid. In other words, you can be meikel to say, you can be meikel not to say, but just don't do something too obvious like being mafsik b'divrei Torah. One of the concerns that you see also came up, besides the pure issue of hefsik that you're not supposed to alter the nusach, was that as a result people would actually be mafsik mamish, because once you're really changing the script, then people don't realize that the basic nusach is to be taken, you know, and not be mafsik in it. People would be mafsik with other things also, and it led to real hefsik. So that certainly was also a concern. And again, that's, you know, a very, very brief presentation of the issue in terms of hefsik. It also comes up later in terms of Shmona Esrei. In other words, this is in terms of brachas of Kriya Shema. In terms of Shmona Esrei, you have the question of being asking bakashas within the first three brachas. The last three brachas, this also now nogea zachreinu l'chaim, as a very controversial thing. We all say it, but the question is, the Gemara says, not allowed to ask bakashas within the gemur rishonos, gemur achronos. So that also comes up in Kuf Yud Beis, I believe, in Shulchan Aruch. I don't think we reproduced it. But again, the Mechaber takes the same basic position. The Gra in Maaseh Rav was machmir, therefore, generally not to say piyutim regularly within the tefillah. He would sometimes allow piyut to be said after Shmoneh Esrei, before Kriyas HaTorah. You'd find, for example, the Yotzros for the Arba Parshios. I think the Gra there says that you say it after Shmoneh Esrei. However, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur was an exception. There he let Piyut be said within Chazaras HaShatz, could be also the first day of Pesach Shmi Atzeres as well. But Shachris and Musaf Rosh Hashanah, clearly the Gra did say Piyut B'toch Shmon Esrei, not in the Kriya Shema Brachos, but in the Shmon Esrei Brachos, where the rest of the concern was more in terms of Bakashas Tzrachim. But the issue of the Mishnah in Brachos about Brachos Kriya Shema, that the Gra was makbid on. I think there's an tziv and a tshuva that might be here in terms of the minig in the Lajin. You have it here, you can find it later, what they did. Basically, I think similar to the Gra. It's the last paragraph there. That is one basic concern, the halachic concerns of Hefsik. There's a whole other concern that was raised, and the one who made this famous was Ibn Ezra in his Pirush to Koheles, and this you have here. He goes very much at length to he targets Hakalir. You know, and really this is why it provoked so much of a backlash. Ibn Ezra was taking on Rosh Hakalir. How could he do such a thing? But Ibn Ezra really minced no words, and he had four major issues with Piyut. And again, Rosh Hakalir was for him the target because many of these concerns are reflected in Rosh Hakalir's compositions. Number one, things are very obscure, very hard to understand what's being said. The average person who's reading this, you know, they just don't get it. Think about Kinnis, for example. You know, how hard is, you know, when you're reading it, to know exactly it's a riddle within a riddle within a riddle, and not to mention the acrostic and the psukim that he's basing himself on. And why speak that way? Why daven that way? It doesn't serve any purpose, says the Ibn Ezra. The second issue the Ibn Ezra had was it corrupts Lashon HaKodesh, because we mentioned before that Ibn Ezra was a purist. He felt, you know, Lashon HaKodesh, Aramis is Aramis, don't mix, you're not supposed to daven in Aramis. The third issue is similar to that in terms of dikduk rules. You're bending the rules of dikduk, zachar nekeva. And the fourth issue was the fact that Ein Mikra Yosef Pshuto, Ibn Ezra, as you know, is known for playing down the impact of Midrashim. Yeah, Yocheved was 130 when she gave it to Moshe. Maybe, all right, it's a Medrash. The Ramban is very concerned with Ibn Ezra. In Parshas Vayigash, he says, gets angry at Ibn Ezra for even suggesting such a thing. Chazal say this is to be taken very seriously. Ibn Ezra was always a little more cool to Midrashim in general. And so much of Piyut is based on Midrash Yagada. So you can imagine Ibn Ezra wasn't so thrilled with that. The Maharal was one of those who came to defense of Piyut and Rosh HaKalir. And this you have beautiful way of defending Piyut in the Sivha Avoda, Perek Yud Beis. The thrust of the Maharal's points are that Shira is not the same thing as just Fila. Shira has its own rules. Just like in the Chumash itself, you see, you read Shiras Hazinu, you read Shiras Hayam, you realize the words are not the same as, you know, as in the rest of the Chumash. The words are harder, there's a certain mystique to them. And that's part of what Shira does. It, when you get more expansive in your emotions, then the words get expressed in a different way, obscure way, you could say, but also as part of the, you know, the expression of the intensity of the emotion. And that's why the words of dikduk can be sometimes bent, because again, when you speak Lashon HaKodesh and you have strict tefillah, then you have to go by the rules. When you have piyut, it's a different experience, as we mentioned before. It's to create the effect, it's to create inspiration. So, you know, we can be a little more loose with the rules. You can see the way Ramal says it, it's very beautiful, but that's the basic gist of it. Others as well came to the defense of HaKalir. This was a very major issue in the time of the Haskalah. There's a lot of literature then. Rabbi Kib Eger wrote letters about this, and others wrote letters. The period in the 1700s and 1800s when reform began to have an impact, one of the things they really were doing is trying to affect the nusach of the liturgy, of the tefillah, of the mazzer, striking this out, striking that out. The issue there became more a question of Kavod HaTorah in a way, and therefore a lot of the issues became more conservative. Kib Eger, how could he just strike out something Mukhayis had been saying for so many years, and Rosh HaKalir was who he was, and so on and so forth. There's a tremendous amount that you can find on this question. It might be here as well, Zecher Yehosef of Yosef Stern, again from this period. He has two very, very wonderful simanim. They go into these issues of Piyut, Yutes and Chaf. I think Simon Chaf is interesting. The question was raised about striking out Yikum Purkan, and he goes into that. And in Yutes, he talks about Piyutim. A lot of these issues you can see playing out in those tshuvas. Also in the tshuva Me'ava as well. the responses in terms of today, of course, I mean, having all these issues played out, so now the question is to look at the issue in its own merits, it becomes a lot different. Because Piyutim, to some extent, had a certain inspirational quality at one time. If we don't relate to the inspiration, so what does that say? What should we do? Should we surrender and say, we'll say it without really understanding what we're saying? Should we try to find a way to cut? And we have cut, as it is. The art scroll has been good in the way it's created standardized neschos. You know, where I'm davening this year, so I'm a little involved with the minyan, so the Baal Tfiyah Reis said to me, so do I have to ask you what I'm saying, what I'm not saying, or pretty much the art scroll? So the answer usually is, the art scroll tells you, you know, if it's there in the art scroll in bold, you know to say it. But meanwhile, there are a lot of piyutim that sort of got disappeared, that just don't get said, because, okay, so at the end of the day, the real challenge is to find a way to make piyutim relevant for us. Just with the time that we have left, I wanted to focus maybe on two piyutim, just to, you know, something we probably are not familiar with. So I just wanted to, you know, to let people know about this. One of the very well-known piyutim is Melech Elyon. Now, as we have this in the Machzor, again, as I noted before, on the first day, Melech Elyon was composed of Melech Kalir, and the second day was Rav Shimon HaGadol. So if you look in the Machzor, from Melech Elyon, let's go to the back of your packets, right? We have a whole bunch of stanzas about Melech Elyon, HaKadosh Baruch Hu being the Melech Elyon, and it follows Aleph Beis. But you notice something interesting. Do we have, was that Khalir's one also? Let's see. No. Oh, so that's what I want to show you. But I want to show you where it appears in the Machzor. I don't know if you have it. You have it? No. Where it appears in the Machzor, not the original version, but the way we have. Tav Kuf Samches Amitz Haminusa. This is the second day. This is from the second day Shachris. I want from the first day Musaf. The next day. Okay, so take a look at this one. This is Musaf the first day. It's four stitches to each stanza. Now, first of all, you realize immediately, Melech Elyon is the beginning of the stanza, not the way we say it, that Rabiad Yimloch Melech Elyon. No, Melech Elyon is the way it's supposed to start, but again, that's part of what we've done. We jumped the gun on the chazan, right? I'll prove it in a second that that's clearly the way it was supposed to be, Melech Elyon first. Now, be aware, again, some people don't know this a lot of times, I've heard chazanim say La'adei to the Nigan, La'adei Adin Roch. It's totally wrong. I mean, I know Piyut takes liberties, but when you sing a Piyut, you don't have to take liberties. You should be able to be loyal to the Piyut itself. La'adei Ad Yimloch. Adei Ad is the expression for eternity, Yimloch. A lot of times, again, people, La'adei Ad Yimloch. So that's not correct. Anyway, it's Aleph Beis, but what's missing? Aleph, Gimel, Hey, Zayin, Tes, Kaf, Mem, Samach, Pei, Kuf, Shin. What's missing? The alternate letters. What happens after we finish the last one, after the Shin? We have two stanzas of Melech Elyon. The first begins with a Beis, and the second begins with a Tav. And then we go Avo, Melech Elyon, and we have another Tav. Now, what's clearly the case, as you can probably guess already, was that when this was composed by Reza Kalir, he had alternate stanzas for every one of the alternate letters. So the Beis Volavarat Shachas was said after the first stanza of Kel Darba Morom, and that's the contrast. Kel Darba Morom and then Volavarat Shachas. And then he had, opposite the Gimel, he had a Dalit. After the Shin, Sheina Ein Lefanav, came the Tav, Tenumatu Ufenu. Here the contrast being, Kadosh Baruch Hu never sleeps, and the Melech Evyon, right, the mortal, poor king, he sleeps. The original version appears, and I xeroxed it for you, from the Mauser on the Forash, which is a wonderful Mauser to have. So at the end of the Mauser, he has the original version of Melech Elyon of the first day. You see this toward the back, right, Shayach Le'amud Shin Pei Dalid, Tav Shin Chavad in the Mauser, and you notice, Bolivar Tzachas, and then you get the Dalid, Dover, Kadever, Dover, Veover, Dome, Leiver, Ad Masayim Loch, right, that's the Melech Evyon. And then the Vav, Melech Evyon, what about him? The Vav, the Chafetz Beresha, the Oser Resha, Muchanofesha, Ad Masayim Loch. And so it goes on and on, the Ches interchanges with the Zayin and plays off the Zayin, the Yud after the Tes. And then you get to, of course, the Tuf, Sheina Engafanav, and then Tnumatu Fenu. And then we don't want to end with Melech Evyon, so we come back, Melech Evyon, Tukfola'ad. That was Rav Elazar Kalir, as he composed it. For whatever the reasons, maybe you can speculate yourselves the reasons. Well, I mean, Jews lived over the centuries with Gentile kingdoms, and the more that they pushed Melech Evyon is a nothing, I mean, the more it could have perhaps raised problems. Who knows? I don't know. Okay, I'm guessing here. But whatever the reasons, they took out all but two of the stanzas and appended it at the end and stuck it at the end. Clearly, then, it couldn't be Ladei Ad Yimloch Melech Elyon, because after Ladei Ad Yimloch came Melech Evyon. That was the way it was meant to be, one by one. So you see that it had to be Melech Elyon was first, and then Ladei Ad Yimloch was the stanza ending. Now, what happened interesting with the second day is even more interesting, because take a look at the second day Melech Elyon, which was again composed by Shimon HaGadol. Shimon HaGadol patterned himself after Rav Elazar Kalir. But how many stitches, like you could say, within every stanza? Rav Elazar Kalir had four. Three plus Ladei Ad Yimloch. Keledat Bamarim, Ladei Bamarim, Ometz Yodo Torom. And then Ladei Ad Yimloch. How many does he have? Amet Saminusa, L'choros Misnasei, Omer Ve'oseh, Ma'oz Ma'chseh, Misav Ve'oseh, Mashiv Ve'och Ma'kisei. And then Ladei Ad Yimloch. There are six. Right, there are six stitches within each stanza, right? So that is his composition. He did it his own way, put his own stamp on it. Again, Aleph, followed by Gimel, followed by a base of Melech Evyon. But what were his Melech Evyons? He had different Melech Evyons for everyone, including the base and the Tuf. What do when we say Melech Elyon on the second day? We append Rav Elazar Kalir's first and last Melech Evyon to Rav Shimon HaGadol's Melech Elyon. Bol Avirat Shachas was not Rav Elazar Kalir at all, because that only fits with the meter of Rav Elazar Kalir's Melech Elyon, which was, as we said, three or four stitches. Bol Avirat Shachas was not his. If you want to know how Rav Shimon HaGadol composed Melech Elyon, go back to the end and you'll see the page right before it, right? Shayach Amatav Kuf Ayin. So get Melech Evyon, Bazo Yemeshusa, not Balavrat Shachas. Bazo Yemeshusa, Peshav Mechase, Bohu Musse, Avon Pose, Nivza Bechomase, Botsaro Yishase, the Eich Yimloch. Right? So that was his version of Melech Evyon, and so on and so forth, with the Dalit, which was consistent with the number of stitches that he had for the Melech Evyon. And then you get to the Tuf, right? And the Tuf. Where is it? Maybe it's not here. Yeah, next again. Tochalto nechzava. Yeah. Niktikvaso nelava. Gviyaso nirkava. Nishmaso nechava. Nishba v'nishba milat hayom haba. That's Gehenim. Ve'eich yimloch. And that was, and then the ending. So what did he do in the end? Rav Elazar Kalir ended with a tough again. He didn't put his name here. Rav Shimon HaGadol ended with his name. Shofet HaEmes is Shin, Mabodav Emes is a Mem, Osa Chesed VeEmes is an Ayin, the Rav Chesed VeEmes is a Vav, Nesivaso Emes, the Chosavo Emes is a Shimon, and the Vav, I don't know, the Shimon, that's Shimon HaGadol. So you see, very fascinating how the Melech Elyon, again, how it evolved, but originally the intention was, again, to have the interchanging Melech Elyon, Melech Evyon. And what we've done is really, again, taken the first and the last of Rav Elazar HaKalir's Melech Elyon and appended it to both Melech Elyons. Okay. Just in terms of the words, again, the homework is for you to do. You have to read carefully before you say it, because at the time it's sometimes, if you're singing it, you do have time sometimes to look at the meaning. But especially for anyone who's actually davening for the Amid should really, it's important halacha, that anyone who's davening for the Amid should be familiar with the words and the nusach and the structure. And it's not something to take for granted. Just because people don't know whether you know it or not, there's an achrayis that you should feel. If you're in a position to be shliach tzibur, if you're in the Roim, certainly you have to do tshuva and be obviously sincere. But not just libavai, but to connect with the words and to be aware of what you're saying. And it's not simple because, again, the root, the origin of these piyutim are in Tanakh and in the Midrash Yagada, and we're not always so familiar with it. So it takes a lot of effort. I would maybe just with the last couple of minutes, did you Xerox? Do you have Sayu?
Yes.
Okay. So this is a very, very well known piyut. By the way, the Chom Maminim, I understand the Rav, maybe it's in the Rav Machzor, I didn't remember if I saw it there or not. The Rav used to not always say all the piyutim, but the Chom Maminim, he was always mocked. Maybe in the end of his life, I don't know. The Chom Maminim, he always felt should be said. He thought it was even earlier than some of the other piyutim. We don't know who wrote the Chom Maminim. We don't know. The Yesayu is another one that we don't know who wrote it. The Yesayu is really a beautiful song in piyut form about HaKadosh Baruch Hu being accepted as king over the whole world. So notice, and if it's not obvious, it should be, it's following the Aleph Beis acrostic. Every verb, every sentence, if you will, is patterned after another letter of the Aleph Beis. V'yasayu chol avdecha means they're all going to come. But the shorish here, v'yasayu, is playing off of the Aleph. They will come to serve you. V'yvaruch Hashem kvodecha, that's the shorish. Here's the bracha, the base. V'yagidu va'im tzidkecha, and they'll tell in the islands your tzedek. That's the gimel. And so on. Okay, should I tell you the story or not? About 20-some years ago, I was one of the people today. I went to the very yeshiva in Brooklyn. And I was maybe your age or maybe a little younger. And I was Rosh Hashanah, I was davening Rosh Hashanah at one of the Rosh Kolel, who's today one of the Rosh Yeshiva. And there was someone else who was also at the table with me. He's being recorded. Okay. It's not there. So I'm not going to mention any names. So there was a person also there at the table who had learned in YU, but since gone to the Mir in Brooklyn. I did the other way. Okay. So he was at the table. So he told over Akasha that he heard from someone who was learning in the yeshiva there. It says the Yachpiru Impisilehem. So the kasha was that Abu Dazar is also Bahana. So how can you use the pesel, the geshka, to dig with? The Yachpiru Impisilehem, it's us, you know, Abu Dazar is also Bahana. And of course, what he said, he went to YU, so he knew that the diktuk of the word Yachpiru would mean something else here. It doesn't mean to dig, but it means to be ashamed. V'chafra halavana, it means shame. They will be ashamed together with their idols. These idol worshippers will be ashamed. Will be ashamed. The Yachbun Pesilem. Okay, not so terrible, right? Okay. The Yatushchem Echad Gavdecha. Now here, the test. Again, I don't know if you realize. This occurred to me, Mamish. I was giving a shiur on a different topic on the Antikanta Shabbos, and there's an acrostic there that also played off of the Yatushchem Echad that Rishonim pointed out, and I was thinking about it, and it hit me that this is a very interesting phrase. Where does this come from? V'yatu shchem echad gavdecha. They will tilt shchem echad, one portion, one shoulder to serve you. Every phrase is based on psukim, so you have to sometimes be creative to realize the origin. So, what? Did anyone know? So, shchem echad, let's start with shchem echad. Gavdecha. Where does that come from? Gavdecha. There's a pasuk, anyone know Tzvanya? Who learned Tzvanya here? No, they don't teach that here. Tzfanya. The pasuk is actually the same pasuk that talks about Safa Beruah that we say in Adavim in the morning. The pasuk says, "Az Epo Chela Amim." I might be quoting it a little bit wrong, so I'm also not an expert now. "Az Epo Chela Amim Safa Berura Likro Kulam B'Shem Hashem." Something like that. It's a pasuk in Tzfanya. And the pasuk goes on, "La Avdo Shchem Echad." Rashi quotes this, by the way, in Vayichi on the pasuk Shchem Echad Alachecha. Rashi quotes this pasuk in Spanish. So that's fine. Okay. But the question is, which v'yatu? After all, the acrostic here is based on Aleph Beis. So v'yachpiru is the ches. V'yatu is a test. So what's v'yatu shchem echad l'avdecha? It doesn't say the word yatu in the pasuk in Spanish. So where is the Python getting v'yatu shchem echad l'avdecha here to connect v'yatu shchem echad l'avdo? Is it in Spanish? What's v'yatu? Does anyone have any guess? Yeah. It's not that hard. It's
Correct.
Very perfect. Vayet Shech Malispo. So here it's fantastic. You realize the association and the chain reaction. Vayet Shech Malispo is by the bracha to Yisachar and Brachas Yaakov. Vayechi. Vayet Shech Mal. Again, he bent his shoulder. And then you have Shechem and Exeber Shava, so to speak. Shechem, Shechmo, and Shechem Echad. And that's the and then we're taking that to create, and this is a perfect example of how Piyut does this. Piyut creates like a new genre, a new phrase. And now the phrase now is part of the language. It's out there. And if you really want to, you know, anyone who studies linguistics probably would have a field day with this. Because you realize how things become, part of the popular linguistic culture, and yet the origins sometimes, a riddle to figure out, but that's what it is over here, and then so on. And every one of these phrases, again, they're patterned after psukim. Example: Bisaldu v'chigo panecha. Who he invented this expression? It's a pasuk in Iyo Perek Vav. Vasalda v'chila. Again, similar expression. Not every expression is a pasuk. V'kabu omalchus chaleim is not a lashon of pasuk. It's a lashon of Chazal. Kabbalas omalchus shemayim. We use it in Aleinu as well. So, but basically, this is the structure of Piyut. This is just a little bit of a taste that, hopefully will whet everyone's appetite. And Amir Hashem, we should be able to find opportunities not to take away from our Iker learning and the Iker learning that we should be doing. At the same time, you realize that without having a handle on basic Torah Shebichtav and basic Midrashim and Piyut, we're at a very big disadvantage, and we really miss out on a certain beauty that really marks every Yantif, and especially Yom Narayim. So, again, not to be overemphasized, really we should try to take the opportunity to not just to learn, but to sensitize ourselves to the beauty, to the rhythm, to the messages of the Piyutim. And Mitzvah Hashem, from that we should be able to have a great appreciation of the message of the Yantif and of the Yom Narayim.